The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand or portfolio so easy it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly, randomly on a Sunday. From Real's triumph in Lisbon to Yaya Touré's forgotten birthday, football bringer of triumph and despair. Today we do the Champions League final. Bale the winner as Real finally grab their big-eared prize, just like last summer. We salute brave Atleti playing without their placenta forward. And ask Sid about Real's 6 a.m. bus parade. Then, it's Saturday's other derby final featuring last-minute drama, the Championship Playoffs decider. 10-man QPR staging a ram raid as just a year after the drop, they bounce straight back to the top flight. It's an ours about face. There's posts from disgruntled Gunners and not much else in this Football Weekly. It has to be a pretty special day to get us up out of bed before 12 on a Sunday, because we live that kind of rock and roll life. But here we are, because Saturday was an amazing day for finals. Michael Hamm was at one of them.
I certainly was, and it wasn't the one in Lisbon.
It wasn't, was it? Well, let's start with the extraordinary Champions League final, then. It was an enthralling encounter. Michael, did you see it, actually?
I did see it. I did gap it. I have to confess, I was spending a fair amount of the time on Twitter conversing about the majesty of the day in North London.
Right.
But I did have the game on and was paying attention. I think it was that enthralling,
to be honest. Yeah.
I mean, it was tense, yes, and it was exciting, mm-hmm, but it wasn't enthralling in the sense of, let's watch this cavalcade of magnificent football unfolding in front of us.
No, but I think it enthralled in a different sense, the sense being, can Atletico maintain this incredible precision, this incredible discipline for the whole, and deny the massive Real Madrid, who'd scored about a billion goals in all their Champions League games so far this season? Could they do it? And they so nearly did, James. So nearly.
They did. But I agree with Michael to some extent that it was the first half in particular was what Roy Hodgson would call, you know, fantastic game, like that Chelsea Manchester United one, and he was in the stands. But once Casillas kind of made that mistake and he got into the second half, I thought it opened up.
Well, that
quite
was
a lot.
Quite early on, to be fair.
Yeah,
but I know what you're saying. In the second half, when Real barely had a proper kick, and, you know, apart from Gareth Bale messing up, but the second half became quite electric, I thought.
I like the nervous tension was what it was all about, and I think had they resisted and kept that Sergio Ramos header out,
right,
it would have been one of the kind of great Alamo kind of performances, wasn't it?
You've seen as well probably the statistic, no, about what the odds were on them doing the double at the start of the season. Were about close to 7,000 to 1, and they were, what, a couple of minutes away from pulling it off.
However, still, anyone who put a euro one at 7,000 to 1 came away with nothing, James. That does need to be remembered.
Yeah.
You get nothing for coming close, except for your manager running onto the pitch embarrassingly towards the end of extra time.
Right, right.
Well, I did like how Souness said, "Yeah, he's disgraced himself there." This is a man who ran onto the pitch with a flag during a Galatasaray.
Well, it was afterwards. To be fair, it was after the game.
It was a little more incendiary than what Simeone did, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, a little bit rich.
Yeah. I had a note about someone's reaction spoiling things, but it was actually Cristiano Ronaldo taking his top off.
Everyone was complaining about that. Oh. I mean, I think the gist seemed to be you hadn't played that well, Cristiano, and that goal was meaningless, so who do you think you are?
Yeah,
fair. Look, he scored in a final. God, leave him alone.
All right, then.
Well, I never thought I'd say leave him alone about Cristiano Ronaldo, but there you go.
I was just starting to like him, though.
If I had that torso, I would be sitting here with no top on, James.
All right, Michael.
I just thought it was a little bit like, okay, now we can finally. Now the important things happen. Now the important thing was Gareth Bale's goal. But when Cristiano scores, it's like, now I can really start. This is the important goal. So, but there you go. That's just me. As you say, if you score in a Champions League final, you can pretty much do what you want.
I mean, the fascinating thing about the game, obviously, was seeing a team mentally collapse so completely from one moment.
Mentally or physically?
Mentally and physically.
Right.
Well, because, you know, I don't think Real Madrid were any the less knackered, were they?
I mean, bear in mind, they were less knackered.
Well, they reached the Copa del Rey final as well. I mean, they played more games this season than Atletico, hadn't they? But it, no, it was the that game has now slipped away from us with that goal. Everything had gone, I think.
Yeah, I saw when they flashed to the bench after Ramos's goal. It looked, some of the reactions looked like they'd been, that was the winning goal that Ramos had scored rather than just an equaliser. You know, there was heads in hands kind of. It did look like it took the wind out of their sails, that they couldn't believe they could maybe get there.
By the time you saw Marcelo's goal, where this wasn't just a case of they were knackered and couldn't keep up with him. None of the defenders made any effort to close him down, and that was being mentally shot.
I think they were
shot.
Knackered.
Well, of course they were knackered, yeah. James. I mean, even I, with my physique, would probably be quite tired after the best part of 2 hours of football. But it's the mental will to try and make any effort to close down.
If they'd been utterly deflated,
yeah.
To have the prize snatched away from them, so agonisingly close, so close they could taste it. The only thing returners that I would venture at this point is the fact that, A, they used up a substitution very early on, as you may have... You
know. I did notice. Yeah. I wasn't on Twitter at that point.
The other thing was that the way they played in the first half was so intense. I mean, for the first 60 minutes, it was so intense, so aggressive, putting so much pressure on Real Madrid. Every time they lost the ball, they'd sprint back and win it back. And obviously, you pay the price for that later on, and the bill was always in the post, I suppose.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you see Bale scoring, you see Ronaldo scoring. They had... poor games, really, over, 120 minutes. They weren't really in it. And that was of great credit to what Atletico Madrid did. You know, I thought their Real's best performance were, Ramos, Modric and Di Maria. I thought Di Maria probably... it was more him behind Bale's goal than Bale. You know, I think he deserved it, to be honest.
Well, one lucky fella who was there at the Estádio da Luz in Lisbon was Sid Lowe, who joins us now on the telephone. Sid Lowe!
Hello, Jimbo. How you doing?
I'm very well. Where are you, Sid?
I just got back to Madrid.
Right. Look at you. Look at you with your jet-set lifestyle. Of course...
Yeah, it's marvellous having an hour's sleep.
Yeah, you poor thing. Now, the team flew straight back and had their open-top bus parade there, bang, in the middle of the night, like, 4 a.m.?
Yeah, I think I might say that the plane got in a bit after 3:30, so by the time they got to Cibeles, which is where Madrid celebrate their triumphs, it was pushing 4 o'clock, yeah, and they left the stadium, obviously extra time and all the rest of it means they left the stadium around about 1-ish, I think, which is part of the reason why it was so late for us, because by the time we got out, there was no way out of there, so we were a little bit trapped in the middle of nowhere. So they left the stadium about 1-ish and flew pretty much straight back, went straight to Cibeles. There hasn't been yet the kind of formal celebration with the local government and the cathedral and stuff, and the same is true of Atletico Madrid from the league last week. And I must confess, I'm not 100% sure what the reason is, but I think that I heard someone say that it was to do with the fact that there's obviously elections today. This has been election week in the UK. It's always on a Thursday, but in Spain, elections are always on the Sunday.
Right. Well, still, it was pretty amazing pictures of this kind of middle-of-the-night celebration.
Yeah, exactly. I can't claim to have seen a huge amount of it because, of course, I was in that sense, I suppose, in the right city, but in the wrong city by the time the Madrid got back. So whereas I saw all of Atletico Madrid last week from their parade, I've not seen all of it from Madrid, but seen some of the photographs and some of the footage, and it's extraordinary.
Absolutely. All right, what are the papers saying this morning? Have you seen?
I've seen bits of them. I've not seen all of it, but, I mean, obviously they were kind of being made in the stadium last night, so I think there's a huge sense of history, which is inevitable because, of course, it was all building towards that 10th European Cup. It's all about it being... the 10th. There's obviously the Atletico Madrid perspective on it is I suppose the fact that they were so close, and I guess you can look at it and say that Atletico Madrid have played 2 European Cup finals 40 years apart and a combined total of less than 2 minutes has cost them 2 European Cups, which is pretty cruel. And afterwards, Diego Simeone was at pains to say that this wasn't something to cry over, that they'd done something absolutely extraordinary getting there. But I think he did feel that, you know, that they were close. He was asked if he was sad, and he said not sad, but a little bit bitter about how it had ended. And then he was asked as well, which I thought he responded really quite nicely to this. He was asked about the fact that he complained about it being 5 minutes additional time, and I must admit I thought 5 was quite a lot. But then I suppose in a game like that with that many substitutions, perhaps it's not altogether surprising. And he said, no, it wasn't so much that I was complaining, it's that you always want less when you're winning. He said, so it's 5, so I wanted 3. If it had been 2, I would have wanted 1. You know, so you know, he was kind of making the point that he just wanted the game over. He wasn't necessarily saying that this is a conspiracy or anything. And then he did say something which I thought was quite nicely put at the end as a way of reinforcing what an extraordinary season it's been. He was asked, you know, what's going to happen next, and he was talking about, well, there'll be a break and they'll look at how they build the squad up for next season. And he said, and then we'll come back and we'll try and win that league title that we've just won. And it was said not pointedly in terms of the tone, but I thought it was a nice way of reminding people just how big this season's been for them.
Right, and he got a standing ovation from the journalists despite the bit where he came on the field and rather lost his temper.
Yeah, I must confess that was in the middle of the madness, and I didn't really understand why. He explained that Varane had kicked the ball at him. And he said, and he was chasing Varane. And of course, when you're talking about Simeone, he was a tough character, all dressed in this black suit. And he said afterwards, I think Varane's a little young to be doing things like that. And it felt like a kind of almost a Mafia Don's disguised threat. You're a bit young, sunshine. You know, bring it on if you want. But Simeone was good afterwards. Ancelotti, of course, his press conference was marked by the fact that six or seven players came running in with champagne and jumping on him and chanting, come on, other work. There, which is essentially how could I not love you?
Yeah.
And I wonder if there was a little bit of pointedness in that message as well.
Oh, how do you mean? As opposed to another manager?
As opposed to another manager, as a what the Spanish describe as a escenification, I don't know what you'd call that, kind of an expressing, a manifestation of the fact that they support him and that they certainly don't want to feel like he was in any kind of danger in terms of his position at the club.
Right. Okay, brilliant. All right, what was the atmosphere like in the stadium, Sid?
Fantastic, yeah, very, very good indeed. I must confess, I didn't see a huge amount of atmosphere in Lisbon. I think the fact that it was two sets of fans arriving by car, some of them going straight to the ground rather than the centre, probably the fact as well, in truth, that I probably wasn't hanging around the bits of the city that they were in,
right.
And so maybe wasn't fully aware of it. But inside the stadium, it was extraordinary, and the noise, it felt to me like the noise from the Atletico Madrid fans was loud, but... that may well just be that they were sitting on that side of me, so it was that's probably an unfair impression.
All right, a couple of other questions. One, Diego Costa now, what's the situation World Cup wise?
Well, World Cup wise, I must confess, Ricardo del Bosque names his squad in about half an hour, and I think there's a risk that Costa won't be in it, because of course this is three big games in a row now he's been risked and he's had to go off early, so of course del Bosque will be conscious of that, I'm sure. Obviously, seven names from that original 30 have to be cut. I think Costa's would only be one of those if Del Bosque was worried about it fitness-wise. I think he wouldn't be because of just a decision to leave him out. And in terms of his future, Gil Marín, the CEO of Atletico Madrid last night, said that he was going to do all he could to try and make sure Costa stayed, which I suspect might be a little bit of playing for the gallery.
All right. And one man who, of course, definitely won't be going to the World Cup is Gareth Bale. What does this game mean for him?
Everything. I think, you know, Bale came and partly because he knew it was the right thing to say, but he came and he talked about trying to win the 10th European Cup. He talked about how he'd come here not just to play in the Champions League, but to win it. And of course, he's done it. He scored what I suppose you could describe as a winning goal, even if there were two after it. I guess it counts as a winning goal. And again, even if the one before it, the Sergio Ramos one, is the really big one. But it's just an incredible season. I mean, even before last night, it was 21 goals and 17 assists. So I suppose that makes it 22 and 17, because if I remember rightly, he didn't provide an assist for any of the other three goals. Which is statistically a brilliant return, plus the two winning goals in the two finals, the two trophies they won. One or two doubts about him over the course of the season in terms of how much he could influence games and how involved he was. But I think it's a really, really brilliant first season for him.
Okay. So one other thing on Ancelotti, there had been a little bit of talk of him potentially being at other clubs. Had they not scored that goal in whatever it was, the 92nd minute, was there a danger he was actually going to go?
I think the knives would have been out for him. I think that he certainly had a president who hasn't always been entirely enamoured with him this year and has allowed that sentiment to slip out at times, which of course, by definition, then undermines the manager. That gets back to the manager, and I think he was very well aware of it. So I think there was a potential risk of that. I don't think anyone necessarily wanted a messy sacking, but I think if they hadn't won, there would have been a sense of his authority having been undermined at boardroom level. I don't think in the dressing room at all. I think some members of the press would have perhaps been a little bit unkeen on him. But of course, you know, that goal changes absolutely everything. And I think he would have continued anyway. But as I say, the kind of the ingredients were there, in so much as the ingredients are a president who wasn't entirely convinced all the time. And to be honest with you, I think that says much more about the president than it does about Carlo Ancelotti.
Indeed. There you go, Sid. There you go. Listen, you get some rest. And we're going to be speaking to you soon when we start looking forward to the events this summer in Brazil.
Fantastic. Speak to you then.
Thank you, Sid. Cheerio. Right, well, that brings the end of this particular bit of Football Weekly. But up next, quite another one. Whoa! Well, Saturday, before the Champions League final, another pretty remarkable game. At Wembley, Michael, and you were there.
I was there. First, I would like to apologise to any Derby County fans who are listening to this, because I'm not going to try for one moment to pretend that that result was anything other than a travesty. Because Derby were clearly the better team.
Right.
But they didn't score.
Right. You're actually quite upset about having won them.
Well, in many ways, my ideal result yesterday would have been for the game to have gone to penalties, QPR, gone to penalties at 3-3, with all three of Derby's goals having been offside after QPR players had been unjustly sent off for something they hadn't actually done, and then we lose on penalties, because I think it's going to be miserable next season.
Right. First,
I think the QPR team needs an awful lot of rebuilding to compete in the Premier League.
They've got just the man to do that, though, Michael.
we certainly need... at least, this is just in terms of the first team, not in terms of depth. Certainly need at least one new centre-back, probably a new left-back, probably need another new central midfielder, certainly need another striker. I mean, and that's before you even get into having a competitive subs bench.
Right.
That's going to cost a ton of money. We're already in breach of Football League financial fair play regulations. Everyone is going to hate QPR even more. QPR are going to lose most weeks, as QPR did in the previous 2 years of being up. So, to be honest, I just don't see a very joyful year ahead. Now, that said, yesterday was the best day I've ever had at football as a fan.
Really? Ever?
Oh, just amazing.
Why was it better than coming up last time?
Well, because QPR don't go to Wembley very often, James. Okay. The last time was 1986, the Milk Cup final, which they lost. Time before that, the 82 Cup final, which they lost. The only time they've ever won at Wembley was the 67 League Cup final, which is before I was born. So just to be watching QPR at Wembley, even if they'd lost, would have been kind of marvellous, got to say. You know, big group of friends, we had a fantastic day, and by the end of the day, as I said before we came in, I felt like a kid on Christmas night when all the presents are done, the grown-ups are dozing off, and you wish it could be Christmas Eve all over again. I did wish I was going back into the pub for my first pint. But QPR, the one thing that has been good this season with QPR has been the defending. That tailed away through the spring a bit, but yesterday, Richard Dunn and Clint Hill, Danny Simpson and Nedim Anua were largely right on top of the game. Anua made a couple of errors, but he's been pretty good through the spring. Dunn was back to the form we saw in the autumn. Though that said, if you're going to pump long balls into the box, Richard Dunn isn't going to have too much of a problem heading them away. It's pace that always exposes Dunn. But with a newer beside him, that was less of a problem. And Clint Hill, what a marvellous man. Someone who's become a hero at QPR, despite his intense limitations. But signalling for himself to be removed when Redknapp hadn't been considering him as a substitution, because Redknapp wanted to bring Junior Hoylett off, but Hill knew that Hoylett was going to be more important if QPR were going to have any release from the defensive pressure, and signalled for himself to come off instead of Hoylett, which is great, and proved to be the match-winning thing.
Yeah.
Clint Hill, next England manager.
Even Fernando Duarte would have had to have taken a breath by now. I'm just going to stop you there for a second. That's remarkable, but the way that it finished, James, did you see this?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I just thought for it to come from an error as well, you know, in terms of...
Not one error, but about 14, though.
Yeah.
I mean, what happened to Derby at the back? Were they mentally already playing extra time? Were they already... What were they thinking? When you think, talk about minds going, they didn't seem to be at all aware of what the situation was there.
No, and also having been in relative control for long periods of that game. These are jitters, you know. I think it happens to anyone. But I felt real sorry for Steve McLaren in many respects, just because I think this was his shot at redemption. Do you know what I mean?
Do you not think that he's pretty redeemed anyway?
Well, we would think that in many respects. I think he's overachieved this season, surpassed expectations, where you could say QPR have done kind of the minimum in terms of, you know, considering the squad they've got, considering the money they'd spent in the past, they should have gone up automatically. But yeah, I mean, people look at McLaren's achievements, for example, in Holland, say he's done very well there. But in England, I think to some extent he's still looking for that.
And the fact that it was at Wembley, of course.
Yes, and it was raining. And it was raining.
And he didn't bring a brolly.
Good
Paul
for him.
Doyle saying McLaren has basically been bullied into letting himself get soaked. Is this some kind of victory? I think Paul's absolutely right. What we've done to that, Paul.
Well, I think McLaren sat in the stands at the early part of the game. Although we did get soaked in the pre-match presentations. Yeah. But McLaren also, what we need to remember is that he's been instrumental in QPR going up as well. Because he was coach at QPR for the first couple of months of the season when they were on the unbeaten 12 game run, and it was after he left that the team suddenly started diminishing. I'd slightly take issue with the assertion that this team should have got automatic promotion, because I know you look at it and say it's a team full of money, but also it was a poisonous dressing room at the end of last season. There were a lot of QPR fans genuinely expected the team to do a Wolves and go down another division, because they just couldn't see it coming together. I think Redknapp's biggest achievement, I'm not a fan of Redknapp, but I think his biggest achievement has been getting the team to at least compete in some way on a day-to-day basis. But it has been a pretty wretched season. It's not been a lot of fun. Football has not been good. It's been, you know, the fundamental tactic. I saw a guy in the stands yesterday with a t-shirt. There was a flow chart at the top. It said, kick off, arrow down, pass to Austin, arrow one way, does he score? No. Arrow back to pass to Austin. The other way, does he score? Yes. Back to kickoff. So, you know, I mean, that's fundamentally been what it's about. If Charlie Austin isn't playing. But the other big story for us has been the redemption of Bobby Zamora. I was away at the Boxing Day game at Forest. And when Zamora was named in the starting lineup, the fairly sparse away support there was, it was just a collective sigh of horror. Now, he's been suffering from a hip injury for some time. He's evidently regained some sort of fitness. But in the last couple of months, as an impact sub, he has been remarkable. You know, only having to play half an hour at a time, but just working his socks off, generally Stakhanovic to work rate, creating enormous problems for central defenders, often fundamentally by pushing them out of the way, but not getting penalised for it. Well, yeah, if that's the way it goes. Scoring important goals and setting up important goals. And I think it's not just yesterday's goal. I think based on the last couple of months, everyone who's watched QPR this season would hail Bobby Zamora.
All right. What about the redemption of Joey Barton then? Because you talk about a poisonous atmosphere of the dressing room, and you then throw Joey into that, and it's all come up roses.
Well, he's managed to keep his head down this season. Still a divisive figure. There are a lot of people, and I'm one of them, who find it hard to forgive the things he said about QPR when he was at Marseille, saying he'd never play championship football, wasn't going back there again, only went there for the money. Well, no one else wanted you, Joey, but he has knuckled down and played decent football this season, and he has been instrumental. There's no doubt that when he's played well, Rangers have played well. So I'm not going to leap in and condemn Joe Barton, not least because I fear that he might at some point track me down and put a cigarette out in my eye.
I don't think he's going to do that, Mark. We've had some experience with Joe, and he's been quite an urbane and erudite.
No, I've got to say, I've met him, and he's been very civilised.
Yeah. Hey, money, Michael. Two questions here, and I don't know, we were struggling with this a little bit. This was billed as the £130 million game. How is it you get that much money from going up to the Premier League? Is that kind of factoring in future parachute payments and stuff?
You look how much the winner of the Premier League now gets. It's £96 million, I think, and it goes down staggered only from there. So, yeah, you are entitled to a huge amount.
Right, but how do they get
£130 million? TV rights deal.
It's prize money plus TV.
Yeah.
So, oh, okay. Wow. It's a lot of money, isn't it?
It is, and assuming that the Football League can successfully pursue QPR for financial player fee fines, will QPR be handing a large chunk of theirs back?
Right, well, £50 million is the equally large, well, not equally, but similarly large sum. Somebody just stop you there. It's a similarly remarkable sum that is being talked of. Now, what's the background on this? You've massively overspent.
QPR massively overspent on wages under the Tony Fernandez regime. And so, well, there can't really be much argument that QPR have...
You not need to
not
have had
dunked
it under
football
what?
Because they wasted it all. That's the incredible thing. Yeah, pretty much every penny of that was wasted. But I can't... I mean, QPR are obviously going to employ lawyers to try and fight against this. But the problem it poses for QPR is that even if they manage to drag this out for months and months and months, and even if they don't end up having to pay the fine, the budgeting for next season has to be done, I'm sure, on the assumption that they're £50 million lighter than the money that is meant to come in, which is going to create problems of its own. I mean, let alone the fact that, of course, they can only start transfer planning now rather than the several weeks ago that Leicester and Burnley could do, or the 14 months ago that Leicester could do, given how early they won the title. So, difficult times ahead, but either financial.
But you've just won the thing and the £130 million other thing, and so you know.
I don't seem very cheery about it.
You don't, Michael.
It was amazing.
You'd like to have it all over again. That's how much you didn't like it.
I would. I would like to have the day all over again. It's just the not what comes after.
Do you think Redknapp will stay? His reaction yesterday seemed to indicate that he might be walking away, or some kind of. There had been rumours about that for a while.
Well, he's been troubled by his knee injury, of course, which you usually think of in terms of players. I think if QPR hadn't gone up, he'd certainly have gone. I mean, last summer, some of the things he was saying suggested he was trying to get himself sacked. You know, all this talk about players that he wanted to bring in, but the board wouldn't let him because they were only 61, these players, and only on £395,000 a week, but the board wouldn't support him and that. And how can you do a job if the board won't support you? But the board wouldn't let him go. I think with Rangers back in the Premier League, he probably will stay, just because it's another go, really.
Mm.
And especially if they actually do throw some money at him, for him to either waste or invest prudently, depending on your point of view of him.
Mm. All right. Well, Football League rules, it says here, limit teams to a loss of £8 million a year. It's not very much, obviously.
No.
Very fiscally prudent. QPR's, you were over that. You're at 65.4 million the year ending March 2013.
Although we were in the Premier League that year, so it's this year's losses.
Right.
But this year's losses are still going to be fairly colossal, even given the number of players who've been got rid of.
Is it true that this year's losses are more than Man City's losses?
I have no idea,
James. I've heard that.
I think at some point we do need to, because it's compulsory when discussing QPR, and given that Atletico Madrid are being discussed today as well, can we just have the compulsory mention for that QPR's wage bill last season was larger than Atletico Madrid's wage bill?
Is that right?
However, let's be honest. I mean, people say that was a waste. We had a season to remember.
Right.
We only won, I couldn't even remember how few games it was. We got relegated. It looked like we weren't going to win all season. We shouted at the manager. We'll remember every day of that season.
Excellent. Money, and of course, Atletico Madrid have their own issues because half their players are owned by other people anyway.
Yeah, and they're like 600 million in debt with the tax man, aren't they?
So. Yeah, I mean, Atletico, the idolisation of Atletico, I find disturbing. I think that is a model for a badly run club. Well, I mean, they're trying to get themselves back on track, but years and years of appalling mismanagement and fundamentally corruption, given the Jesus Gil regime. And also, what has disgusted me this season is seeing Azerbaijan Land of Fire on their shirts. It makes me sick that football whores itself out for reputation laundering so much. Seeing Gazprom's name all around the Champions League. Seeing Qatar on Barcelona more than a club's shirts. Goodness.
You're not a fan of the Gazprom anthem?
I'm not a fan of Gazprom at all. I mean, all this just trying to get Gazprom trying to get themselves talked about, just position themselves as something other than evil oligarch company. Azerbaijan as something other than polluting human rights abusers. You know, when people say football and politics shouldn't mix, no, only if it's the most disgusting politics of all.
Fair enough, Michael. I'm sure there's a lot of people nodding as they record this in the van down the road.
Or going bearded sandal wearer.
Excellent. All right, well, listen, let's just conclude today's very special Sunday pod with a couple of posts and tweets. Oh, and also a quick mention, did Yaya Toure get his birthday cake in the end? Was that the strangest story of the season?
Yeah, I think it was. He already had a birthday cake. They sang him the songs. But just in case he didn't, Richard Keys gave him one on was it Al Jazeera?
But he genuinely, was it him or his agent who genuinely said, I'm not sure I want to stay at Man City because they didn't give
his agent. His agent said it, and then Yaya said, don't trust anything that doesn't come out of my mouth. And then 45 minutes later said, my agent does speak for me. Yes, he is right. I will be talking about this after the World Cup.
Wow.
The problem with the Richard Keys cake is all the hairs from the back of his hand had fallen off into the icing.
We'll just savour that image for a second. And then talk about David Luiz. Now, hey, financial fair play and all that. Weren't PSG allowed to make like one signing this summer under the draconian restrictions imposed by Platini's army of lawyers? I believe so. They were allowed to spend 60 million and just sign one player, and 50 of that 60 is going on David Luiz, and he's their one player. So that's all they're going to do, get David Luiz.
But I think they can book that transfer spend, 10 million over the next 5 years, as long as there is a wage freeze. So if, for example, he's on large wages, it would imply that they are going to have to sell someone to then put him in. So
they can't increase their wage bill.
Yeah. So, or there are players who are leaving on free transfers, for example, like Menez, who isn't probably on as much money as Luiz will be on, but Marquinhos seems to be leaving as well. So they'll probably find a way to get under it, if you like.
All right. Things swing back and forth regarding David Luiz and his worth on a football field. You've seen PSG a fair bit this year. If you had to make one signing for next season, given that Monaco are probably going to be a bit stronger as well, would that be the one you'd go for? For £50 million?
It does sound excessive, particularly when they'd spent £34 million on this Marquinhos last year, who is a teenager, said to be the future of the centre-back position. Alex is also leaving on a free transfer, so I'm sure they could another former Chelsea centre-back who Luiz will replace. But I don't know, I think... Yeah, he's a versatile player. I doubt he'll get a game in midfield, given the midfield that they've got. But it's strange. And also, I guess Chelsea seem to be looking for another centre-back, even though they've got Terry, Cahill, Kallas, and they've brought that Kurt Zouma guy as well, haven't they? I don't know what they're going to do.
Right, okay. Well, we'll find out next season, I guess. Find out next season. That deal not confirmed yet, although David Luiz has already said Allez PSG, or Allez Paris on his... On his blog.
Ali Paris.
Good. Ooh. Bruce Wayne, will you be recording the pod every day in the World Cup? And if yes, would it be from Brazil? Yes and yes. We will be doing it every day and it would be from Brazil. and also, lots of people posting in about Arsenal winning something last weekend and our reaction there too. We gave a lot of room to this, a major, major story. But I think there was a contentious moment where I, in the spur of the moment, suggested that Liverpool's season were better. And loads of people saying, here's no fans in hell saying, Arsenal have been beaten with a stick that getting close and style are worthless if there's no trophy to show for it. Now suddenly Liverpool have a better season when Arsenal finally won. It's a fair point. Peter Parker, 78, dear Miss Richardson, blah, 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 shame on you, with a similar point. It was an ill-considered remark. But actually, now that I go back and look at it, I'm still thinking that, yes, I think maybe they did. It's true that it's not fair of us to beat Arsenal about the head about the fact they never win anything when they do. Say, oh well, you've done that, but you haven't done these other categories. So fair enough on that. But I still think that they finished fourth, and they still haven't moved out. They haven't kicked on in footballing parlance. They're still stuck there. And this was a season when they truly could. And it was astonishing how they just backed away from actually committing to the challenge in January. And even though they had a win over Hull in the FA Cup final, that to me doesn't change the fact there must have been a very frustrating season for their fans, but that's just my opinion. Liverpool, on the other hand, did absolutely take themselves onto another level, even though they, you know, slipped up. But they were arguably just that one miscontrol from Steven Gerrard away from actually taking the title. But I think whatever happens, they did move up a level. But that's enough justifying myself. Sorry. Yes, fair point about us moving the goalposts vis-a-vis Arsenal and successful seasons. And with that, we come to the end of today's pod. We'll be back with our special World Cup previews. They're beginning on, I think, Friday the 6th of June. They're going to be quite special. And then, as I briefly hinted right there, we'll be on the air every night post the last game with all the drama from the World Cup in Brazil. Good. All right. Have yourself a super time till then. The countdown's already underway. So in the meantime, many, many thanks, Michael Hann.
Thank you very much, James.
No, thank you.
Have a wonderful summer and a wonderful World Cup.
Oh, thanks ever so much. James Horncastle, thanks to you too.
Thank you.
And we'll be speaking to you in June.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today. No credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code Guardian.